Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. On, clinical sexologist, with Xander Kegg, licensed clinical social worker. Our guest this hour is Charlie Burton, a native of Charlottesville, Virginia. He is an Equality Virginia board member, the founder of Diversity and Recovery, an organization providing safe spaces for 12-step recovery for the LGBTQ community, and the founder of Black Trans Men Can Cook, which will publish the first cookbook created solely by Black Trans Men in 2024, Transgender Publishing. Charlie is the author of Boy Beneath My Skin, a Black Man Living in the South, and is a junior at Morehouse College. Welcome to the Umbrella Hour, Charlie.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I met some of the Equality Virginia board members, by the way, some years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So what are you doing at Morehouse College?
Business administration with some concentration on public health. But it's been an amazing ride. It's been quite interesting.
What are your goals after you are through?
It is basically checking off the bucket list. It was something that I did not do because of my active addiction years ago when I should have, and I'm just reliving the youth, and I'll receive the degree around about the same time I'm going to be retiring. So it's the degree in retiring, and it's just a personal goal.
Speaking about just going for it, I remember when I was in my first graduate program, there was a 90-year-old woman earning her PhD in conflict analysis and resolution with a focus on international conflict, who had done her entire dissertation project on child soldiers.
Child soldiers. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, all around the world, militias and guerrilla military, they use children. Yeah, they kidnap them from their homes. And now that's inspirational. A 90-year-old getting her PhD. When they say it's never too late, I mean, they mean it. Charlie, you talked about being in recovery yourself. And so is that where the idea for diversity in recovery comes from? Were there experiences that you had in recovery that you feel weren't meeting your needs? And was there a need for such an organization?
Diversity in recovery was birthed during the time of the racial unrest with George Floyd and COVID, and where do we go from here with AA meetings and being shut down. There was a young African lady who had gone to Richmond, Virginia, which is about an hour from me, to one of the protests. And she jumped on to a meeting on Zoom and was expressing to the group that she had been to this protest and the smoke and the adrenaline. And she really wanted to drink, and she really needed to talk about what was happening in the world. And she was yanked aside by some good old Bible thumper. I call them Bible book thumper guys. And they basically told her, you cannot come into the rooms of AA and talk about any of this. You just need to talk about recovery. And so she was expressing, well, who do I talk to about this? Because it's affecting my recovery. And they said, no. You need to stick with the principles. We don't want to hear this. So I got whiff of this. And I was, wait a minute, let's pump the brakes. Where do we talk about this? We're in the middle of a pandemic that the word we've never heard. We're having to wear masks. We're not working at home. We're trying to reintroduce ourselves to a situation that's going to continue to save our lives by going on Zoom, of all things, to go to these meetings. I told the young lady who had made the phone call to me, I said, then we need to create our own space. And so that's how Diversity Recovery became birthed, is that it was a space created for us to feel safe, that we could talk about anything. And so although it followed the 12-step rule or 12-step principle, we also talked about if drinking milk harmed you today, if you drank a glass of milk and you felt like you wanted to smoke some crack behind it, this is going to be the place to talk about your drug addiction, your food addiction, just a safe 12-step space. And it went amazingly well. I mean, it just blew up. I went off to have my surgery, my top surgery, and turned things over to the group. And I got a phone call one day from one of our trans guys saying, I don't even like to go to the Wednesday night meeting anymore because it's so many white women that are straight that are sitting in there talking about God knows what. And it had been taken over by allies. They didn't take it over viciously. It was a great space, but what they didn't understand, they took our space. And so I stress a lot of times to people about allyship. You want to be our ally, you need to step back instead of stepping forward and taking over. And so we're now back trying to rebirth diversity and recovery. But it's a true model of looking at what allies can destroy just by being in their spaces and not stepping back and allowing us the space.
Amen. Like you, I regularly go and do talks, to a variety of audiences. And I know that you do that quite often. And I like to let people know that allies are important.
Yes.
Every major movement has relied on allies.
Right.
And sometimes allies can disrupt or get on to, I don't know what you would even call it, right? They go on some sort of pseudo-evangelical, process of becoming a champion, and yet what they're doing is not fully representative. Okay, if you are the parent of, let's say, a kid who has gender dysphoria, maybe a teenager who's trans, you can champion for your child. But to go out into the world and start saying that what your child has experienced is what all trans people have experienced,
right?
That's going to be a problem eventually. Eventually, that's going to be a problem. And if somebody says, excuse me, what you're doing and saying, thank you, I'm sure your child appreciates it, but we can take it from here now in the larger scale of talking about trans people or trans healthcare.
Amen. Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
I can completely relate to that. I mean, I've had literally falling out where I live. Well, I had to move from Jacksonville. I lived there for 10 years and I felt so stomped on because I was verbal about those issues and very concerned for the trans community and had served on a project. And I didn't realize how traumatized I was. I don't have a typical victim mentality,
right.
But I really was traumatized. It felt horrible. And because I spoke out and I wasn't rude, I wasn't disingenuous. And I was, I think, just really concerned about what I was seeing and experiencing in that space. And I'm still recovering from that because some of the individuals have not forgotten. Mm-hmm. So when I go into some of these spaces, I've had to carry that load and just hold my head up high and give people the same experience that they've always had with me previously. So they remember that. And there have been a few organizations who have stood behind me, and that's felt wonderful. But it all takes is one person. Charlie, were you ever able to pull that recovery group back together again?
We've put life in it two or three times. And, unfortunately, when in our world, and you can relate, in our world, when we know something's not safe, we don't go back to it. And so I've tried to breathe life back into it in many different ways. And Charlie never says no to myself. And so I have not said, no, this is not going to work. I still have the name. I'm going to work with getting the website back up. I've gotten a few grants, so I'll be able to get this back moving. And so I might have to step back and look at it. So maybe a Zoom meeting format is not what it needs. And so I've done a lot of outreach and helping people, and the money has gone to getting someone into rehab, or you're out on the street and some harm reduction stuff, something. And I just believe that the name is so strong, and the whole concept of it is just, it just screams and bleeds, please help us, that it's going to work some kind of way. Some kind of way this will turn around and work. I haven't given up on diversity and recovery yet.
Good. Well, I could imagine that if you go to an in-person model and create some sort of guidance for other locations to start up their own in-person model.
Yes. I like that. Thanks, Andrew.
Let it grow organically, right? Oh,
exactly.
Yeah, because it is. It's a great name and it's a wonderful idea. I've never been in recovery myself. As a social worker, I've referred people to recovery services for years, and even before I was a social worker. So I do know that there are specific places where people go and they hold 20, 30, 40, 50 meetings throughout the week. Some of them are general, but some of them are very specific. Women in recovery, men in recovery, LGBT-specific recovery group, Al-Anon, Alateen, these kinds of things. So this idea of maybe could it be embedded into those spaces? There could be one additional meeting that they add, which is diversity in recovery, and you're allowed to talk about how our social interactions can trigger the potential relapse, right, and how we should be able to talk about those things, like your adrenaline rushing while you're in this heightened excitement stage. That's exactly mimicking particular substances in your body. We make all those substances that we ingest, right? And so that's why some people might not take an amphetamine, but they're addicted to the runner's high.
Yeah.
So the ability to talk about how our social issues impact our desire to want to, you know, relapse or use. So, yeah, I'm rooting for you.
The amazing thing is that I've stepped back in the 3 years and it's helped a lot of people. And then when I can see someone who, for me personally, this year, May 22nd, will be 18 years for me, I think back sometimes. Geez, could I have stayed sober from Zoom? Well, I had a hard enough time staying sober just walking into these rooms. And you throw Zoom into the mix now and my head goes off. And there's so many who started out with diversity and recovery being their foothold that are still in recovery. And it's just amazing to see that. Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, the Richmond metropolitan area is quite interesting.
Charlottesville is everything you've read about and then some. Talk about the infamous August 12th. I tell people, when the good old boys here want to say that, oh, they came into Charlottesville, they needed to stay somewhere when they were here Friday and Saturday, so somebody had them somewhere. And being a person who was born and raised here, my struggles have been great. So you think about, first, this big black butch lesbian, and that's in your face. And then all of a sudden, it switches from lesbian to now 100% male. And it has been different. It has been a different ride. I don't feel unsafe in Charlottesville for transitioning, but I feel cautious, and especially in the work that I do. My sister is always saying, you know, the only thing that she worries about is that I'm too out there and do too much work, and would some good old boy get pissed and do something? Well, you know, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen, because I'm going to continue to be the advocate that I need to be. I'm going to continue to be the voice. And I think one of the reasons people have asked, why did I stay in Charlottesville? Because I could have had the opportunity to go anywhere else. And I feel like I'm destined to show people what trans looks like. I want people to see that trans is somebody who can go to Morehouse Online, who goes to work every day, who pays the taxes, who lives a normal, decent life, who just sits on their front porch in the country and just hear the cars go by. It's just normal. And so drawing this picture of just this normal person teaches my community so much. And I'm shocked at some of the people who have embraced who I am. I have this childhood friend. He's just a jack of all trades. He's just a country guy. And it was so heartbreaking. About 3 months ago, he had done some work for me. And I told him, I said, follow me up to the store at the ATM machine. I'll get cash so I can pay you. And so when I came back from the ATM machine, in his van, he rolled his window down. He said, now, I need to know, what do you want me to call you? He said, I'm working on calling you by the right name. He said, but do you want me to call you a guy, or do you want me to call you a girl? He said, well, you know, like when I'm talking to you, do you want me to use, and I'm talking to you about other people, do you want me to use him or he? And I said, so that's pronouns. I said, please use the pronouns he, him, and his. And he said, if I slip, don't think I'm trying to be nasty. I'm working on it. And so it's those small stories and those small victories in this little small town that I live in that I think the work that I've done, I have gotten the respect of the path that I've taken, that people are just not vicious behind it. And my immediate family has been mind-boggling. And then cousins and so forth. It's just, It's me. Although many people have horror stories of living in small towns, transitioning, I have not, but I also cannot forget where I'm at. Every now and then, the truck riding by with the big Make America Great on one side and the Confederate flag flying on the other reminds me of where I'm at.
I really love the distinction you make, Charlie, between you don't feel unsafe, but you're cautious.
Right.
I like that because the message that is being spread throughout the trans community and towards the trans community is that we are all victims of some sort of invisible genocide that's happening. And I think that terrifies people. And it sounds better to me to hear, be cautious. Most people are cautious.
Right.
You know, the world is not, quote, safe, right? Don't you remember as a kid? Look both ways before you cross the street or you get run over. Like, our brain is programmed to be cautious.
Right.
That's one of its main functions, is to keep us alive. So we're cautious.
This is the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. We will be taking our first commercial break. Our guest this hour is Charlie Burton, a native of Charlottesville, Virginia. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. We are going to pick up where we left off. Our guest this hour is Charlie Burton, a native of Charlottesville, Virginia. Charlie has been talking about the trials and tribulations of living where he does. This is the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. We hope you have enjoyed it so far. Let's pick up where we left off.
I also like that you mentioned the, what I like to say, and I've said it so many times in the last almost 20 years now, is that with my transition, is that I overestimated and underestimated how people would respond to my transition and being a trans man. And some of the people that I assumed would be very pro turned out to be not so pro. The people that I assumed would be against it have been my champions in so many ways. And so I love hearing that just some good old boy in your small town, Virginia, right? I'm assuming rural.
Yeah.
Right. Rural Virginia. And I know a gay man. I work with a gay man through Braver Angels, who
who lived, I think, almost of his entire life in rural Virginia, and he loves it, right? So, and he wants to dispel some of these myths about being gay or trans or queer in rural areas. Whenever I do mentoring, and I'm wondering if you bring this up because I know you do mentoring, if you talk to people about you can't always rely on thinking that your conservative network is going to reject you and your liberal network is going to accept you. You can have the exact opposite experience.
Yes, yes. I try to tell guys, again, that word caution. Aunt Jo, who has all these Bibles all around in their house, and the cool Uncle Jack, that's the cool guy, he might be the one that has that crazy screwed up thinking about trans people. I've experienced that personally, and that some of the people that I thought, I don't know, are the very ones who are so accepting, or at least attempting to understand. And that's basically all we ask for, especially if I do, is if you can just attempt to understand me. You don't need to totally understand me. It's funny when I tell people that I'm trans, of course, immediately the first thing they do is they look at the chest, and then it goes down to the private part area, like there's something's going to be hanging out in public. So they do that. Really? You are? And you can see the body scan from top to middle. And then it's, but you're such a regular person. What the hell else am I supposed to be? Well, you're just such like a regular guy. Or I get a kick out of sometimes people who don't know where I work at, women who will say, oh, Charlie, I wish my husband was like you because you're so in tune with women. And I'm thinking to myself, honey, if you only knew. It's just, that's the fun side of being trans.
I think a lot of the country folk have had to carry stigma because of those biases that people harbor.
Yeah. I'm 10 minutes from Charlottesville, and it is one of the main reasons I'm still here. It's a little town called North Garden, and it's growing. But to be able to step out on my front porch, it's amazing because I was thinking the other day, I said, I've taken on the life of my mother. My mother was into bird feeders and gardening and flowers, and I can't wait to breathe life back in through flowers and colors on the porch and feeding these birds. And my sister and I have hour-long conversations about, oh, you know what? I saw the map. Watch the map, and the hummingbirds are now 25 miles away. So we're anticipating the hummingbirds coming to the feeders. And I think about this old man living in the country. People used to talk about going to the country. I don't think I can get this country boy out of me. When I was a little kid, the cover of my book is this kid sitting on this concrete porch with a sugar daddy, a nasty, dirty baseball cap, some dirty kid shoes and shorts. And that's exactly who I am today, with that look, the feel, and just being in that country environment. Love it. Just absolutely love it.
You know, I'm thinking about people in the city. Some of them must be either consciously or unconsciously aware of the disconnect that they have from being in the country, or else goat yoga wouldn't be so popular.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's bringing in these little pygmy goats to jump all over you while you're in downward dog pose. You know, Charlie, I really want to hear, what was the catalyst for Black Trans Men Can Cook? this is fascinating to me, this whole concept. Well, obviously, Black Trans Men Can Cook, but you decided to make it a thing. You put a title on it, and now you're putting out a cookbook. So tell us more about Black Trans Men Can Cook.
Dr. Goldbauer had talked about knowing some people connected with Equality Virginia. First of all, I'm on the board of Equality Virginia, but I just got to put a plug in for Equality Virginia and the ED, Narissa Rahman, that we have, that is making so many changes and making trans people more aware of policies that affect us. Just not what you hear on 6:30 News. It's exactly hurting and trying to help us. My hat's off to Equality Virginia, but that's where Black Trans Man was birthed. So, of course, we're back into the world of virtual, and they had a virtual TIES conference. And TIES is Trans Informational Empowering Summit. that Equality Virginia would have every year. And so that year they had to have it via virtual. Young man had conducted a people of color discussion to a round table. And we broke out into these breakout rooms. And so we're about 8 or 10 of us in these breakout rooms. And I asked one simple question: who likes to cook? And I got such an array of answers. I don't know how to cook. Oh, I'm a chef by trade, my auntie. And then one of the most powerful stories was this one was like, I don't like the kitchen because it brings me trauma. I'm like, trauma? And what was going on was this person, this kid, was living in this home where multiple people coming in and out. And they had been molested in the kitchen. And that was their trauma about cooking. And so I went to Margot Wilson, Transgender Publishing, and I said, Margot, I just want to make a cookbook. These guys got all these different recipes. Some are vegan. Mine, of course, is Southern cooking. And we've got all these different recipes. We just want to compile them together. And as Margot and I were talking, my friends always say, you know, your man must go 1,000,000 miles an hour with ideas. And while I'm talking to Margot, I said, but Margot, they're more than recipes. These are stories that we tell, because my story is I'm the little girl fighting because I don't want to be in the kitchen because it's too girly. I want to be outside in the hay field on the John Deere tractor in 100 degree weather with my father. And my mother is saying, nope, you belong in the kitchen and your brother belongs out there in the field. What I learned was by being so angry, I had to learn how to cook. And as I embraced myself through my transition, cooking has nothing to do with gender. And so I was then able to say, I'm okay with expressing, saying that I like to be in the kitchen. And that's what we did with these guys. And so at first we were just basically meeting once a month just to meet, grab some pizza and just, you know, of support. And then it continued to grow that we have a story behind food. And that's a lot. Also, just not in the trans culture, but in the African-American culture, is that these women, these African-American women, the only way they knew how to express who they were was by their food. They were not known that they kept a clean house. They were known that Miss Mary Sue, she's the one that when we go to church is going to have that big 5-gallon pound cake, or this woman is known for making her best rolls. That's how I just kind of birthed it. It has been a fun project, but it's also been an eye-opening project.
Did I understand you right that this cookbook is unique because it adds in the stories and experiences?
Yes, relationship to food.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been a fun project, but it's also been one, it's been so eye-opening on trans men. Even after we transition, there's so much more that we have to go through. The gender roles of the kitchen. And is it okay for me to put on, I call my apron a cape, put on an apron. And for me, that was a struggle for me. And then once I got into the kitchen, I realized I am my mother. I am my mother. She left such a mark on me. I cook like her. My sister reminded me of how methodical I am in the kitchen, and that's how she was. Everything had to be just right. Everything had to be clean. Everything you move to the next thing, to the next thing. And then when you start smelling that aroma of the food, and then you realize it's a language all of its own. And so absolutely. I've also got a second cookbook coming out because I've taken all my mother's recipes, and we're compiling them and the stories behind them. My mother was such a storyteller, and that's where I get my gift from, is that we had to realize one year, in order to get these recipes, we had to sit down and type them because they all came out of her head. And so what we're realizing is that, you know, that sweet potato pie might not taste just like what my mother made. Well, it probably won't, because she didn't tell us everything that was in it, but we get the gist of it. And it's just that beauty of that language that's amazing. I learned so much from these Southern little women in North Garden about just cooking. Yeah.
That's wonderful. That just the oral traditions.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. That's a very popular,
yes,
you know, genre of book and movie.
Yeah.
Right. To be telling those stories. You and I, Charlie, we are friends, of course. We'd make good partners in business. I'm married. As handsome as you are, Charlie.
He's Xander, but not my type.
Thanks. But because I'm an idea person.
Right.
And you're a project person. You're a doer.
Yeah.
Right. And so I have another friend, Reverend Rohr. We actually interviewed Reverend Rohr last year, and we've been friends for 22 years. And they came to me one day and they said, you know, you have all these ideas. When are you going to do something about it? Well, what do you mean? I have literally have a little black book where it says idea book on the outside.
Okay.
And I write all my ideas in there. And so they said to me one day, read to me some of your ideas. And so I read, there's a lot in there. It's for years worth of ideas. And they said, okay, let's do one of those. Where do you want to start? And that's how Letters for My Brothers, my first anthology came from, because that was one of the ideas in my book, because I had just been spending some time with Jameson Green, who we've also interviewed a number of times now, actually, because he's been on some panels. And he was telling me all about Lou Sullivan, who founded FTM San Francisco, which became FTM International, and how he used to correspond with trans men all over the world through letter writing. And I even got to read some of the letters. And in Letters from My Brothers, we published an exchange between Lou and a guy named David. There were maybe two or three or four exchanges in there, right? That's part of our history, right? One piece of that is pre-internet. How did we connect? We connected through letter writing.
Letter writing.
Right. And so, but I had the idea, but not the audacity or the moxie to get it done. I have moxie in other ways, but not with the taking an idea and making it a reality. So it's good for idea people to be connected to
project
doers, project people. That's right.
You're a visionary.
I guess. I don't have visual images. I had brain damage as a kid, so I don't actually get visual images when I think about things. But people have often said visionary, but in that non-visual kind of way. But it's so wonderful to think about. A person had an experience. They told you about it, right? In a recovery group. They told you about it, and you're like, let's do something about that. You went to a virtual conference. And you asked a question, you listened to the responses, and you said, let's do something about that.
Something about it, right.
Maybe you're even familiar with the phrase social entrepreneur, right? Because entrepreneurs, where are the gaps? How do I fill it? I'm going to fill the gap. As a social entrepreneur, you find out where's the disconnects, right? In the social fabric, so to speak, and you fill them.
Right.
Yeah.
None of this would have ever happened in my life if I had not been sober. You know, Xander, I don't know if you remember how we met, but it was Jude Patton and Jameson Green and Xander and myself. We were all going to be on a panel at a conference. Was it Victoria, British Columbia?
Yeah. Moving trans history forward.
Moving trans history forward. And so we would meet before the conference to get our game plan of what's going on. And I remember the night before, 2 days or something like that, before we were supposed to jump on, Xander and Jameson said, Charlie, you don't have much to say. I hope you don't get lost in this whole transition. And you're going to have to speak up. You're a little shy. And Jude, without skipping a beat, said, oh, trust me, you won't have to worry about Charlie. And so the day of, you could see Xander and Jameson, where did this monster come from? We can't shut him up. But when we got off of the call, I was such in awe of realizing here are men that I have read about and said to myself, gee, I hope someday I can do something like that. And here I am now on a panel and I have their personal phone numbers and we call each other brothers and friends. It made me realize that, geez, Charlie, your life is coming around full circle. Just amazing to, like, that light bulb moment. Yeah. And I always share that because that's how the three of us connected.
You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest this hour is Charlie Burton from Charlottesville, Virginia. Charlie has written two books, Black Trans Men Can Cook, created solely by Black Trans Men in the spring of 2024 through Transgender Publishing. Charlie is the author of Boy Beneath My Skin, a Black Man Living in the South, and he is also a junior at Morehouse College. Let's take a short commercial break. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. This is the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest this hour is Charlie Burton from Charlottesville, Virginia. Let's pick up where we left off.
Well, and now you have a book out, so now people are going to be reading about you. I mentioned it, but we haven't really talked about it. I know you do mentoring.
Yeah.
Right? And Jude has done mentoring. And Jameson is my mentor, 18, 19 years now. I do mentoring. And so it's through mentoring and through making our stories public, whether that's speaking engagements, talking on a YouTube, you know, talking on even this. This is only audio, but your voice, right? This story is forever available. You know, and all the work you're doing there in Virginia and with the Black Trans Men Can Cook and Diversity and Recovery, you're now that person, right? For all those people who don't even know you yet.
Pass the torch on to someone else. That's what the mentoring is all about. Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have just a little bit of time left, Charlie. What's coming up for you? Is there anything that we haven't already talked about that you want to share with the listener?
The two cookbooks are coming out. That's those projects. Margo and I are tossing around me doing a second book from the Boy Beneath My Skin and something more on the wavelength of what it's like as a trans man to go to a pretty much Baptist college, all men school, which has been an amazing, amazing ride. And Xander, I think it's time for Charlie to pump the brakes and slow down and sit out on the porch and enjoy it.
Absolutely.
I've done a lot, and I can rest now knowing that the young men that I have mentored, I'm now sitting back and watching them take that torch and even do even bigger and greater things than what I did, because that's what it's all about. We go one certain path, but then we stop and we either at the right or the left, and we realize that one path might be a little bit rockier than the other, but we all get to that same destination. And it's just been absolutely amazing to watch these young kids just take off and just do their thing.
I could imagine this being very popular. You could do a YouTube channel called Porch Wisdom, And you could sit out on your porch.
I like that.
And just pontificate. Just talk about,
I like that.
You know, talk about the your life and the lessons you've learned and the wisdom you've gleaned and the ideas that you want to share and some of the ideas that have come to you that you haven't put action into mm-hmm. and put them back out there into the universe for other mm-hmm. people to grab onto them. I bet people would love to hear you just rattle on from your porch. With some sweet tea, not too sweet.
Not too sweet, but a little bit of lemon, yeah.
There you go. I would love that. I think that would be, because I've actually seen YouTube channels where it's some old guy sitting at his kitchen table, just talking.
Right.
It's not about the news. It's not about, he's just talking about, you know, I had this thought this morning, and that reminded me of this book I read, and that made me think about this person I met, and they just go on some story. And you said you were a storyteller, just like your mom. So
I sit back these days and I realize through it all, abuse and trauma and alcoholism and drug addiction and food addiction, I've overcome so much. And it is just such a great life right now.
Yeah. You know,
it's just, I'm loving this ride.
Yeah. That's wonderful. I got another idea. Stories from the porch.
Stories from the porch.
It's yours. You can take it.
All right, I love that. I'm going to shove that over to Margo. Yeah.
Why not? The Umbrella Hour, I mean, who knew, right? We would just, Dr. Ron and I would just talk to people.
Yeah.
It'd go out into the Ethernet, and all of a sudden we've got between 10 and 12,000 listeners to each episode every day in the first 2 weeks. We don't count after 2 weeks, right? It's like, who knew? I thought maybe a dozen people were listening.
Right.
Had no idea.
We have no idea.
No idea. So, Charlie, really quickly, where can people get a copy of Boy Beneath My Skin, A Black Man Living in the South?
They can go on Amazon. I like the more personal touch than giving Amazon money. It's on my website, charliespeaks.com. And on there, you can also pull up some of the great things, like some of the talks that I've done, a bit of reading about me, who I am. You can purchase the book and I'd sign it and mail it out to you. Thanks for letting me do that plug.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Charlie. Thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah. Thank you both. Yeah, absolutely. This has been a great morning.
Well, when I'm in Virginia next time.
Call me.
I will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll get your number from Sandra.
Yeah,
that's
yes.
awesome.
I mean, just come right on and sit out on the porch. And,
I will. I'll do that.
Bumblebees.
Very cool. Thanks so much, Charlie.
Thank you. Thank you.
You have been listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest this hour was Charlie Burton, a native of Charlottesville, Virginia. We hope you enjoyed the show. Tune in next time. And thank you for listening.